Hey, you guys, welcome back to Listen Bitch Presents Tell Me Why You're Special. This is the arena where we don't sanitize the story, we tell it the way it actually happened. Because the truth is, some people live quiet lives, and some people end up in rooms most people will never even hear about, backstage, behind the camera, in the chaos. And if you've lived long enough in that world, you either lose yourself or you figure out exactly who you are. And God is a funny way of taking a life that looks like chaos and turning it into something with meaning. So today we're going, I'd say, behind the scenes. Let's get into that. Today's guest is Gary DeFranco. He is a guy who's lived inside some of the wildest corners of television, and somehow he has turned this into a career. Hi, Gary. Thank you so much for coming into the hot seat today. I launch everybody from the same kind of spot. Give us your elevator pitch. Who are you? What do? And then what makes you special?
All right, well, thanks for having me. I would say I've been in the television industry for over 20 years. I also dabble in marketing and music, and as everything's evolved into more content and people are able to make their own stuff, I've been trying to help people, different athletes and artists, kind of carve their own lane. I started in reality TV in 2003 when it was pretty new. And people didn't think anyone would watch like the average Joe doing average things. And it kind of, some of it was fake, some of it was real, some of it was average people, some of it wasn't. But it kind of gave a lot more lanes for people to tell their stories. So that's what I've been trying to do for the last 20 years, is find interesting people, tell their stories, or give them a platform to do it themselves.
I love that. That means we have a little bit in common, which is the birth of this show is I think people just don't understand, you have a story. And if you're not using that to launch, like you're taking a lot of stuff for granted, I feel like. You have, Gary, you've been in rooms where, most people are never going to see. Is there a moment where you just thought to yourself, like, how the hell did I end up here?
There's been a few of those, I would say. I worked with the UFC for 20 years, and I've seen a lot of crazy stuff around the fight world for sure. I've also followed the DEA around in Detroit and Newark for a year while they were busting crack houses. That was a whole different thing. I worked for the Playboy Channel for a little while, which is not as crazy as it might sound as a photographer. Like competition show, but it's like I went from Detroit in a crack house to like Malibu in a mansion within like a 4 day period during that time. And I was like, what the hell is going on here? Like, I don't know how this is working out, but I'm gonna keep plugging away and see where it goes.
That's amazing. Definitely opposite ends of the spectrum. You've
Yeah.
worked with fighters, street racers, artists. Who are the most real people you've met in these environments?
Fighters are pretty real because they know they could kick everybody's ass, so they don't really have to like act that tough, so I think a lot of those guys, they get all the anger and aggression out, while they're fighting, but they're a lot more disciplined than most people would probably think, especially at the highest level. So I definitely got a soft spot for those guys and what they go through, and how hard it is, and it's a thankless job to get all the way to the top if you could make it there. And if you don't, you just take a lot of butt whoopings, for pretty much nothing. So I'd say, fighters probably out of everybody.
No, I could see that. And that's not just physical. I mean, that, like you said, getting taken the ass kicking and nothing comes of that. Like you're being mentally broken on some
Yeah, the mental
level.
side. The mental side's even more, I think. I've seen like the best guys I've like physically just break mentally, and guys that didn't have the God-given talents or the size or the strength, but they're just tougher and they can just get through the tough spot, So
What is the biggest lie? 'Cause you said you did some reality TV. What's the biggest lie reality TV tells, and what is actually real behind the scenes there?
well, every show is different. I've been blessed to do a lot that are more documentary style and not so many of like the dating shows or stuff that's kind of more set up, but I've done a few of those, and a lot of them is just it's just think of them more as actors than real people on some level, because the story's kind of already set, and they're the more that it's gone, the more set up it's got, because budgets have been cut down. And We used to shoot like days and days and days, like 200 hours to get a 30-minute episode when we first started. And now it's like they'll set somebody up at a restaurant. Okay, you guys talk about this subject for a half hour. Make sure you yell at her about that one thing. Okay, we got that. It looked good enough. Okay, we're out of here. You know, like that, there's a lot of that goes on now for sure.
I can see that. I mean, you've seen fame up close, and we have our version, right? Like those of us that are very detached from the Hollywood and all the stuff. You've seen it up close. What does it actually do to people?
I think it like whatever you are already, it like amplifies it. So if you're a jerk, you're gonna be the biggest jerk around. If you're a nice person, you'll be the nicest person. Now you have money and means to help people. So I think like rarely does it take a good person and make them bad or a bad person and make them good. You know, in my experience, it's kind of been like if you're already an asshole, like you're gonna just be a huge asshole. And if you're already a good person, you'll probably stay that way.
That conversation has actually come up quite a bit in the show, just in relation to money, right, Gary? I feel like money just makes you more of who you are, and I guess that's the correlation of fame, really. What's something that you've witnessed that completely changed how you see human nature?
Well, I own part of a fighting organization in Colombia called Empire MMA, and a friend of mine owned it originally, still does, and he had me come down there a few years ago, just to help film some stuff. They were trying to get some investors. So I talked a couple of my friends that are camera guys into going, you know, for plane ticket and hotel room and a few dollars. And you know, he was gonna pay me enough to like take care of the expenses and stuff. And we got down there and like midway through the week we saw like one girl drove 39 hours from Venezuela to fight for $100 and she couldn't be happier. And like four different buses through like checkpoints that could have been like really, you know, bad for her. And you know, and I saw how like you know, the UFC, you know, it's a lot of money. You know, they just did a $7 billion deal, and these guys are fighting for pennies. It was in a place called the Church, which is like an old warehouse. And like, I plugged my laptop in right before we went live, and the building's power completely shut
Oh
off.
my God.
Like, just the laptop. And then
Right.
the Colombian director goes to my friend. He goes, "It was the American." And I was like, "Oh shit!" Like, I didn't know I asked.
Wow.
But like, it was just like the purest form, and like these guys, girls are like fighting. Kind of because they have to, but kind of because like they want to. It's kind of like I think that was probably like really eye-opening after being around like so many like very high-level athletes and like people that are making a ton of money to see these guys that are, you know, making $100 and that'll last them the month. You know, it's pretty crazy.
Well, I mean, I feel like crazy kind of sums up everything that you've been through. It seems like so much. You went from rapper to TV executive. Like, is that intentional or was that just that crazy unfolding?
I was like 23 years old. I was living 20 people in a 2-bedroom apartment with no front door.
What? Hold on. 20 people in a 2-bedroom. No
Yeah.
front door. Okay.
Had failed, dropped out, quit college, however you want to put it. I was working at a record store. This was like, you know, 2002 or 3. And that was about to close down. And I'm from Cleveland originally, and I was living in Las Vegas where I live now. And I was gonna go back home. My grandpa was a barber. He was the oldest barber in America when he died. He cut hair for 75 years from 18 to 93 years old. So and my uncle, my cousin, everybody was barbers back home. And then I had some friends that were into some other much worse things that were trying to get me to go back there and do that kind of thing. And I was gonna move home in 10 days. Our lease was up, and my best friend from college had moved to LA the year before, and he was a camera guy. And he called and he said, "Hey, like, I got a job on this Discovery Channel show. Could I crash on your couch for like a week till like my crew housing where they put me up stays?" And he's a neat freak, like the most
Oh
neurotic
my
dude ever. And this
God.
place was a war zone. I mean, like, people had to arrange themselves like Tetris to sleep on the living room floor to all fit. Like, it was nuts. There's like strangers. I'd see a dog and I'd be like, "Whose dog is that?" And they'd be like, "Oh, it's so and so's kid." I'm like, "Who's so and so? And why is their kid here? And why do they have a dog?" Like, How is this even happening? Where's our front door? Like, no one,
Yeah.
we never figured out where the front door went. No one would cop to
Aww.
how we just didn't have a front door. So, long story short, I was 3 days before I was supposed to go, and he comes back and he's like, "Hey, they fired the assistant camera guy today. Like, do you want to try to get that job?" And I was like, "I don't want to be anyone's assistant. I don't know anything about cameras. Like,
Yeah.
that's not for me." He's like, "Just try it." And he took me to Burlington Coat Factory and got me a dress shirt because I didn't currently have one. And I made a fake resume at Kinko's. He's like, "Don't bring the fake resume." I'm like, "Ah, I gotta have something." So I meet the executive producer. I give him the resume. He's like, "This is all bullshit, isn't it?" I'm like, "Oh," he's like, "I told you." And I'm like, "That's my email address," and it just still says email address on there. I'm like, "Oh." But the guy said, "You're from Cleveland?" I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "I went to school in Ohio. Are you a Browns fan?" I'm like, "Unfortunately." He's like, "Me too. You've suffered enough. Like, I'll give you one shot." And that learned it like. Turned into 20 something years.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I broke the camera the first day, lost all the releases. Like, my friend was so mad at me. He's like, "Oh, what?" He says, "You were just supposed to stand here. Like, that's all you had to do." And I had to go to the bathroom. I was standing there for like 6 hours. I run in, run out in 30 seconds. There's this lady just looking down. She's like, "I think I broke your camera." I'm
Oh
like,
my
"Why are you even
gosh.
over here by this camera?" Yeah, so it started off pretty rocky, but
Yeah.
it
Well,
was,
look at that though. I mean, there's a great takeaway. The Browns like had a positive effect on people, you
Yeah, the
know?
one.
That's they've done something good. I feel
Yeah.
like that's great. America, you see that now. They've done something great.
Yeah, if it wasn't for the Browns, I think like I'd probably like be dead.
That's amazing. Well, how much, I mean, it just makes me think, Gary, like how much of your career was actual strategy rather than just saying yes to shit to the opportunity and like figuring it out later? Because step one, that was a big figure it out moment.
Yeah, mostly that.
Yeah.
Like, it was the show was called American Casino on the Discovery Channel, and it followed like everybody that worked at this casino in Vegas, the behind the scenes of the marketing people, the GM, events people, like the cocktail waitresses, like everybody.
Yeah.
And I worked there on that show for a long time, and the owners of that casino also owned the UFC. So one day, my boss, who hated me at the time, comes in. She's like, "Does anybody know about the UFC?" I'm like, "Yeah, I know all about it." She's like, "How do you know about it?" I'm like, "Me and my friend Fatik used to steal the D or the VHS tapes from the video barn by my house." And she's like, "I didn't need to know all that." I'm like, "But I know everything about it." She's like, "I have a conference call in like 5 minutes. Like, you got to come with me." So I go with her, and it's like Dana White, who owns the UFC, like big figure, and then the Fertittas, and then the guy that owned the production company that I worked for, like, are all, other places. And it's me and her, and I'm just writing on sticky notes like who the fighters are, and they're like, "Oh, you really know your shit," to her. And
Yeah.
she ended up becoming the person they selected to run the first season of The Ultimate Fighter, which is like the reality show for the UFC. So
Yeah.
just happened to be right there at that time, and then I worked on that show for 40 seasons for 20 years.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
That's
so
amazing.
right
Well,
place, right time, and like just went for it like most of the time.
yeah, I think saying yes, and that's another thing that, you know, I love for the show to represent, not just that you have a story, but like when you're willing to say yes to stuff and figure it out later, that's where opportunity it kind of presents itself. I feel like just being brave enough to be like, okay, what do I have to lose? And if more people could adapt that mentality, I think it would move the needle to getting people to actually steward their potential. You know what I'm
I
saying?
agree.
Like,
I agree 100%.
and like people are sitting at home just scared to do a damn Facebook Live. You know what I'm saying? And I just am like, if you guys just could see, I wouldn't say it's easy. I mean, it's terrifying. I imagine you probably still wake up with nightmares from your first day breaking a camera, and you know, like I just it's figure outable doesn't mean that it's going to be easy. And all of these moments, right, in your life, that what would you say is the moment that kind of forced you to reinvent yourself the most? Because we talked about that a little bit, is just like the adapting and you know, moving into what's next. So what would you say is the pivotal moment of reinvention for you?
I would say like right around COVID, our industry took like a huge hit, and that was also the time where like content became a huge thing, and and from getting 8 month runs on different TV shows and making hundreds of thousands of dollars, and to like they don't do that hardly at all anymore. And if they do, the budgets are cut, the staff's cut, they're miserable places to be. So I didn't do much camera work after I broke the camera. I ended up going at the production route right after that. So I would have, hire people, hire the sound guys, hire the camera guys. I also didn't make music at all from 23 till almost 40. It was like, I was like, I have to be all or nothing. Like, I can't keep like having one foot in, one foot out. So during COVID, I was alone, single, like sat there in like the first week, I just watched like The Office. It's like 10 hours a day, and I got Papa John's pizza like 4 days in a row. And I'm like, okay, this has to stop. So like, cut out all the TV, cut out the fast food, started cooking, working out, learning how to, edit more, camera work, sounds, like basically went to school the whole time. And then started my own company during that time. And like, it's been really successful. And I've been able to be kind of a one man band, but have like a really good network of people that we all work together, for the bigger jobs. And I think I had to like adapt, and a lot of people didn't. They were stuck in the same rut, and they're just hoping this old way of things comes back, which it won't. So, it's a lot of people just calling every day and asking, hey, do you know any shows that, need X or Y and Z? And I'm like, there's just not that many, like 10% of the TV shows getting made now that did 15 years ago. So,
No, I see that, and I think it's kind of across the board that people are still just kind of stuck, and they're using that as their excuse. Well, this happened, and it was their victim moment, right? Where they could just stay safe and coddled up and then blame everything but themselves. I think that's still happening. But
a lot.
yeah, you have, that beautiful chaos. What's the cost of that lifestyle?
The cost is, I'm 46, I'm single, I have no kids. I think like there might have been a relationship here or there throughout the years that could have been a good one, but it didn't work. I was on the road all the time, and they always say it'll be fine, but people aren't really good with long distance relationships. So I think if the cost was is definitely like personal relationships. I've never been to a high school reunion. I've missed a lot of weddings, birthday parties, funerals, family vacations. Like when I was really in it and working on three or four shows at once, it was 100 hours a week for 8 months straight without a day off. It's, I think some health things probably. Kind of like some ulcers and different things kind of came from the poor diet and stress in the time. Like, so I think the health and just really the it's you're married to the business and the job at the time, and most people are either single or divorced, that do what I do.
What is something that you've recognized that people really want until they actually get it in this arena?
Being famous, like at some level, a lot of people want to be on reality shows and they don't act right on the show, there's definitely some editing tricks. And, if you're, a nice person for 80% of the time, but you're a jerk for 20% of the time, you being a jerk is
That's
the
tough.
ratings, So like you get on the show and all of a sudden you acted like a fool in front of the whole world, and that never goes away. So I think some people wanted the fame, and didn't really like think of the next few steps, or, in the moment they wanted to cause trouble, stir things up, get the next season or whatever the case may be. And then, that goes away, and now they're just some asshole that was on a reality show, and everybody, looks at them funny when they go back home.
And they didn't know the price, the cost
Yeah,
of that.
I try to like be really honest with people with stuff like that. Mainly when I'm dealing with like all the athletes and stuff, I'm like, this is gonna live forever. Like, represent yourself. If you're loud, be loud. If you're quiet, be quiet. Just be yourself, but like try to amplify it a bit. Because you're in a room of 20 people, you got to kind of be known and seen. But a lot of it's just ta the tactics that people use on a lot of these shows are pretty rough. And happily, I haven't had to work on any of those that are got really bad, but I've heard the stories of just the manipulation and things that they do to people. And yeah, it's not for me.
No, it can be toxic out there, and y'all know the internet is forever. So, I
Yeah.
mean, that stuff just doesn't go away. What do you think is the most misunderstood thing about success in your world?
what exactly success is. Like, is it being on your yacht by yourself? You know, is it like having, you know, when people get to a certain level, like they have to have more and more, and then they're in competition with the people around them, and one Ferrari's not enough. They need this and they need that and they need the jet and they need, you know, I think like when's enough where like you have enough and then like time and, you know, relationships and rest and those things like become as important as like going after whatever it is. And I think, yeah, what being successful is like people got to figure it out for themselves, I think.
No, absolutely. That's definitely something that's going to hit home and resonate with listeners today, because that's also been a topic that comes up is, you know, what I think that whole mansion and cars, like that kind of success is phasing out. And I think people are really understanding what's important. Like there's been an incredible shift
Yeah.
just in humanity, like what's important. I'm, you know, being I get to be a stay-at-home mom. I have six amazing kids. You know, I being the homemaker, that's successful to me, and still getting to live my dream of having amazing conversations and learning something new every day. That's huge. It's, you know, not the fancy stuff. So I love that. You now you're working with all kinds of people, probably people you never expected to. What has that taught you about judgment and identity?
I think that people will surprise you if you're like talk to them. I think people hate black people if they never met a black person. People hate gay people if they never met a gay person. People hate people they haven't met. But if you sit down and have a beer or a meal with somebody, like you might not hate them anymore. You're in your echo chamber on social media. And I spent a lot of time in the South, like the deep South, doing these street racing shows. And there's people that like were super racist, or I thought they were, and then our crew's like black and Hispanic and Asian, and like they never saw anything like it down there, and then all of a sudden we're all friends, and they're like, "Well, I guess you're not all that bad." Like, what I don't know what that means, but like, you know, it's I think you know, I think like people need to meet more people, and their perception online or what they see, it's always going to be the worst. You know, if there's somebody on the news from any, you know, white, black, Asian, you know, Muslim, Jewish, Catholic, whatever, it's usually going to be a bad story. And, you know, and they add up. And like, you don't know anybody that's actually from that. And you just see like, oh, all Muslims are terrorists because that's all I see on CNN. But you don't have any friends that are Muslim. Then all of a sudden you have, you know, your neighbor moves in and Muslim's like the most awesome dude ever. And you're like, oh, like, why did I think that this whole time? You know, there's billions of them. Like, they can't all be bad, you know, but you never think about it because, you know, the echo chamber is a dangerous thing, and like how these algorithms work, and it just gives you more of what you want, kind of, or think you want, and all of a sudden you're only getting one side of every story. And I
Nope,
think that's.
it's been curated, cultivated, and specific and intentional to keep people mad, angry, distracted. Like it's, I am very, I'm very anti-media, anti all the things. Imagine that. And I actually make my living on social media, but it's to say, like, you guys, you know, it is about meeting people in real life, having conversations in your community with people, because your perspective would be really different. And then you realize, wow, there's really nice people out in the world. If you watch the news every day, you're gonna be like, wow, the world's on fire and there's no good people. I'm never leaving my house. Or you
Yeah.
actually go have the conversations, you're like, wow, this is amazing.
Most
Very
people want the
interesting.
same stuff.
Exactly. If we followed you around, if we took a camera and followed you around for a whole week, what would shock us the most about you?
Like my life's pretty boring, like now. Like I paint and make music like most of the time if I'm not at work, and like you know, I got all the going out and all that stuff kind of out of my system young. So I think like my job tends to be a little chaotic. So I try to have my personal life like as boring as possible.
Boring
So.
is the new cool thing. I very much agree with that.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit now, 'cause you're back to making music and getting back to the things that you were passionate about before you got on the crazy train.
Yeah, unfortunately, right before COVID, one of my best friends died, and he was always trying to get me to do music again, and I was always putting it off. And it's kind of like, you know, when they say like find the thing that you love and do it, you never work a day in your life. Well, like it was the opposite for me. Like it killed my love for like music early because I was trying to please everybody and trying to like had it, you know, yeah, back then you had to get a record deal from somebody. You couldn't just put your own music out and stuff in the 90s and early 2000s. So it was like
Right.
I would get really close and then they'll be just start at ground zero again. So I think like when I was sitting there and during COVID and I was just like hearing his voice in my head almost and just like, okay, like I want to make like a song about him. So I'm like, I got to figure out how to do this. So I bought like a crappy keyboard, like one of these for
Hell yeah.
$100 and then added a laptop. And I just started like teaching myself, you know, how to make music. And like, I got obsessed with it and just not to make money. Like if I make some money, that'd be great. But you know, I just want to make stuff that I like that other people, you know, might be able to relate to. So I think it's never too late to start doing stuff like that. You know, I think if you golf when you're young and, you know, now you're 50 and go try to golf again, you know, go try to jet ski or water ski or, you
Right.
know, if you always wanted to crochet, like just go to Michael's and get some stuff and watch a YouTube video.
Yeah, I love that. What is your next big thing that you're working on?
Right now, just building this league down in Colombia is a big focus of mine. We're on Telemundo Deportes now, so we're getting some exposure for these kids down there. They're really talented, so just trying to build that up to a level where they're getting the training and there's money enough down there for them to train and fight full time and not have to worry about it. So I think that's probably like my main priority is just trying to get that going, and it's not making money. You know, we're putting all the
Yeah.
money right back in, so we're trying to get that going. And I'd say that's, you know, the bigger priority. And then, unfortunately, with my own company, like a lot of the stuff I do is corporate, and you know, I'll be like, I was at like shooting an anesthesiologist convention like a
Okay.
week ago, and
Yeah.
they're not, they have no sense of humor at all, by the way.
Seriously, because I've had six C-sections, and I want to say the anesthesiologist was my favorite person in every room. Like, they were hilarious.
Yeah, they didn't think like my joke about like they'd save a lot of money on anesthesia if they just went and gave the speech like to patients before.
Oh.
Like they're like, "What? I don't understand." I'm like, 'cause this is
Oh.
boring and like I'm
Yeah.
falling asleep. Like they're like,
That's
"Oh,
funny.
that I don't really get that." I'm like, "You get that? Come on,
Yeah,
you
they
know?"
got it.
Yeah, so like, yeah, I think they were just kind of like
In their
annoyed.
egos.
Yeah,
Yeah. Shame
and I
on
was,
them.
yeah, I'm like, it's all good. So like some of that corporate stuff pays the bills, so it lets me, you know, be able to do the other stuff. So I'd say I handle all that, keep the lights on, and then
Yeah.
trying to like kind of move that money to other things that I'm more passionate about.
Yeah, I think that's amazing. How can people get resourced with you? Where can they find you? How can they support your journey?
My Instagram's Gary underscore DeFranco 147. And it's maxglowmedia.com. Either one of those is probably the best way. And check out Empire MMA. We're on Telemundo Deportes. Our next fight's in June. If you're into combat sports or anything like that, if not, there's some really good stories that these kids have. So, you know, you might find something that you like, even if you don't like the fighting part.
Yeah. I mean, my husband will sign up for that for sure. He's all about it. So,
Awesome.
yeah, Gary, this is the part of the show that I'm going to tell you what I think makes you special. And it's not just the rooms that you've been in or the 10 lifetimes that you've been through. It's that you didn't get lost in them. You lived through chaos, culture, pressure, the reinvention, and instead of letting it define you built something out of it. You've seen the surface and you've experienced the reality underneath it. You adapted, you evolved, you have moved through this process, and now you're setting this incredible example that it's never too late. Do what you want to do, live your dreams, and make your passion speak out loud. You are standing in it, and it's very clear. I think that makes you incredibly special. To everyone listening, some people play it safe, some people stay where it's predictable, and some people step into the unknown and they figure shit out as they go. And it's not because it's all planned, it's because they're willing to live it. Gary said yes to opportunities and figured it out later. You have to be bold in this lifetime. You have to be aware. And please remember that your mess is your message. Even in the chaos, even in the detours, even in the moments that made no sense at the time. Babe, that's the story. So if this episode hits, please share it with someone who needs it, okay? Gary has an incredible story, an incredible message, and he's got a passion project that could use the support. So share this to someone that you know who may need it. Maybe it's your husband, a brother, a cousin, an uncle, or girl, maybe you like it. I mean, It's whatever it is, let's help spread his message because you guys have access to people we couldn't. And if you guys are ready for the hot seat, come tell me why you're special. Gary, you're amazing. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.